Hello, friends. Grab your skeleton buddy and head to your basement. You're listening to Blame It on Buffett.
Well, I sailed from Lauderdale down to Key Largo. Crossed the Gulf on a fast sloop, and I sailed the Abacos. As a kid, I read Contiki, and now all the pirate books, too. There's just so many places on my list to see. I'm going crazy just trying to choose.
All right, welcome to this week's episode of Blame It on Buffett. I have a great guest this week. His name is Boomer Blake, and he's a trap rock musician, as well as he has started a Facebook Live show called Boomer's Basement, and we'll talk all about that. But it's a really great show about trap rock and such, so you're going to want to check that out for sure. Before we get to the interview, I just want to do something that I've been talking about for a while, which is Jimmy Buffett song stories. So if you saw my post back when I first posted about this, I posted a picture of the Salty Piece of Land book. And I was like, hey, this relates to a specific story I have about a Jimmy Buffett song. Send me songs, Jimmy Buffett songs that really mean something to you that relate to a specific event or time in your life. So mine related to Salty Piece of Land is that when that book came out, I was a freshman in college and I bought the book. And if you bought that book, then you know that it came with the single, a CD that just had this single Salty Piece of Land song on it. And I had a CD player alarm clock. So I could set my alarm clock to play the CD that was in the CD player. And that was the CD that was in my CD player. So basically every morning for like all of freshman year, that was the song that woke me up when I set my alarm. So it's not necessarily like my favorite Jimmy Buffett song ever or anything, but like it really is evocative to me of that specific time in my life. Like I hear that song and I immediately get taken back to freshman year of college. So that's my story. One of my stories, I have many obviously, but that's the kind of thing I'm talking about when I say like, submit your song stories to me. I'm still happy to take some, and I've gotten a few and I'm going to just kind of tell one each episode, but I wanted to sort of bump one up to the top of the list, and it's not really even so much a long story or anything, but one of my, somebody who follows me on Instagram, her name is Amanda Lynn. And, this week, and we'll talk more about this in the interview too, but this week, if you've been listening to the Jimmy Buffett Songs You Don't Know by Heart song series, which is premiering on Facebook one song a week so far, it's basically Jimmy playing old songs that he doesn't really play. It's so good. And this week he played Something So Feminine About a Mandolin, which is like one of the old Jimmy Buffett songs that I really, it was like basically my main song that I wanted to hear him play in this series. And I didn't really think he would do it, but he did it this last week. So go check that out. It's so awesome. And really funny too. His daughter Delaney is directing those, and it's just like super great. So check that out. But yeah, so I wrote on my Instagram, I posted that I read, this was like one of my favorite songs and I was really wanting him to play it. And Amanda Lynn, I think you probably see where this is going already, messaged me and was like, hey, this is like the song I requested for him to play too. I really wanted him to play the song. And because I'm named, my parents named me after this song. So, obviously a Something So Feminine About a Mandolin is the song, but her name is Amanda space Lynn. So I thought that was a really fun and awesome story. And, thank you for, I asked her if I could share it on the podcast. And I just thought it was really timely to go with that episode of Songs You Don't Know by Heart this week. So, thank you. And I actually don't know. I don't know if she's listening to this, but like, I don't know if you go by Amanda or if you go by the full Amanda Lynn, but, it's really great. And I wish I had, actually, I do kind of have a fun story about my name, but it's not Jimmy Buffett related. So clearly yours is better. But yeah, thanks for letting me share that. I thought it was really fun. And that's such a cool way, like fun play on words, but also like Jimmy Buffett related thing to name your kid. So I thought that was really great. So yeah, coming up in next episodes, I'll keep telling your stories. But if you have ones and you haven't sent one to me, please feel free to do that. You can email me at blameitonbuffettpodcast@gmail.com, or you can message me on any of the social medias. It's basically at Blame Buffett Pod on all the social medias. So let me know if you have any stories you'd like me to share. And with that, now let's just get right to the interview. Like I said, has a great show. You should check out his show in addition to listening to his interview here and his music. Check it out. This is Boomer Blake. All right, welcome to this week's interview for Blame It on Buffett. My guest is Boomer Blake. Boomer, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem. You are a trap rock musician, and then also recently, I guess it's been a little while now, but fairly recently, you started a Facebook Live show called Boomer's Basement, where you've had some really awesome guests and stuff. So we'll get into that a little bit more later. You're a man of many talents, it seems like.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, everybody keeps asking me how this talk show came about, and I have to admit it came about kind of by mistake. It was back in April, and all the other artists were doing their their live online concerts, and I'm not an awesome guitar player, so I was trying to find a unique way to stay out in front of my audience and stick with trap rock and just kind of do something unique. And Danny Rosato and Jonas Lawrence are two of my good buddies. We have, when we play together, we call ourselves Category 3, and we're hopefully hosting a booze cruise in Key West, the weekend that Meeting of the Minds was supposed to be. And I said, guys, what if we did it like a talk show, and I'll call it Boomer's Basement. We could use it as kind of like a way to just BS and maybe turn it into a commercial for our cruise. And they're like, yeah, let's do it. And we've got a really good audience. And all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'll try it again. And the next time around, I called Isabella Stefania and Erica Sunshine Lee, and the show just kind of started to steamroll. And it's been, I don't even know. I mean, I think we're up to maybe 15 shows now or something like that. And it's been kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it caught on really quickly. And I'm not really surprised. It's a great show. It's super fun. The guests are always really good. And I think the thing is, like, people like to, as much as I'm saying this, like, I do a podcast, but like, I think people like to see people, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like having a show where you can like watch the people while they're talking, on like Facebook, I think is a really great idea, because I think people don't get that as much. So like, there's a lot of podcasts and stuff out there, and podcasts are cool too, because you can kind of just like listen while you're doing other things, and you don't have to like have your computer open or be watching something. But at the same time, there wasn't really anything in this sort of genre that had that sort of talk show where you could actually watch it kind of feel.
Well, yeah. And with my show, what I kind of felt I wanted to do with it as it started to develop, what I wanted to do was, well, The first unique thing is the fact that the host of the show is also a singer-songwriter.
Right.
So, I'm not taking anything away from like radio DJs or other people that do interviews, but I'm actually in the mix. I'm in the community of musicians. So to have a musician and other musicians sit down and talk, and my show is really not just for musicians. I mean, what I try to do is I try to include everybody that's in the trap rock community. Artists, super fans, people that are backyard concert promoters, or like Music on the Bay promoters, things like that. Because this trap rock is so awesome, because it's not just the musicians, it's the whole community together. And so the idea was that my viewers would be kind of a fly on the wall for what would amount as kind of the equivalent to a backstage kind of just BS session amongst musicians and people from the community, for conversations that people might not always be privy to. I like me being able to sit and talk shop with Scott Kirby or Mike Utley, or the Mayors. I mean, it's what people really have been enjoying. They They grab a drink on a Friday night. They know it's going to be live, so anything can happen. And like one of the other DJs I'm friends with says, it usually does. And we just have a great time. I try to bring out the funny stories because there's been so much negativity on the internet and on the TV with this COVID and everything else in the world. For an hour, I just wanted people to be able to sit, hear a bunch of stories that they might not ever get to hear, and just have a good laugh and a drink. So even Johnny Rustler, Johnny called me up. He says, Boomer, I saw you on TV because there you were having a drink at your tiki bar. And he said, I had to run to the fridge and get a beer for myself because I wanted to have a beer with Boomer.
Yeah, I mean, like how can you watch that show without a drink? You know, that's the perfect show for that man. Kind of thing. Unfortunately, it starts often before I'm actually off of work on Friday. So
yeah, because you
really
on the-
drink so much. But it's still a super fun show to watch. And you kind of mentioned it, but like you have had some of the coral reefers on your show, which is really cool. How did that, like, did you reach out to them or how did that happen? Or did you already know them?
Well, I mean, I've met Peter and Brendan a bunch of times. I opened for Peter and Brendan a couple of years ago at a fundraiser. And we have a bunch of mutual friends, but what really happened, one of my really good buddies who I've known since we met in the parking lot of a Buffett concert. I've known him, God, it's got to be like 18 years now. Freddie Quisgard. Freddie's a percussionist, and he's a very familiar face in Key West now and at different Trop Rock shows. You'll see him. I think he lives up in Maine, but you'll see him up there backing up Tiki Tom Starkey. And he's really good friends with Scott Kirby. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, so, you know, my show's kind of getting some really good attention. I said, what do you think the chances are that Scott would do an interview? And I said, you know, I'll have both of you on. We can talk about both of your interest in hockey and we can talk about Scott's background and all. And Scott said yes. And it was really cool because Scott says to me, I said, you got your drink, right? And he says, you know, Boomer, I've done a lot of interviews. I've never done one with a drink in my hand. I said, well, just see how it goes. And it was funny because what I did was I reached out to people. I did my research on him, but I also reached out to people who knew Scott and asked them, hey, you got any cool, you know, insider questions that I could ask him? And at the end of the interview, whenever I log off from Facebook, everybody stays online and we continue to kind of have like a cast party after the show. And Scott said, I'll tell you, Boomer, he said, I've done a lot of interviews. That was the most fun I've ever had. He said, you did your homework. And he said, the questions, you didn't ask cookie cutter questions. He said, I had a bunch of good laughs on that show. It was a lot of fun. And that night, and I'm sorry, I know it's going to seem like a long story, but
No, that's why we're here. Go for it.
So that night, though, Kristen McFadden, who is the brainchild behind Trop Rock Strong, she's married to Bill Brehm, who was the recent president of Parrotheads in Paradise. She works with Jim Mayer, Uncle Jim. And she says, hey, would you want to interview Jim? And I was like, well, of course I would. I said, but I usually have more than one person. Is there any chance his brother's available, Peter? She goes, I'll give him a call. So Peter and Jim jumped at the opportunity. And Jim goes, is it all right if we bring Brendan? I was like, no.
Brendan's not invited.
So now all of a sudden I'm interviewing Peter, Jim, and Brendan Mayer. Another awesome interview. We had such a blast. For people who don't know, the reason Kristen's a teacher and Jim has I guess it's a nonprofit that educates kids on bullying. And it's something that's very important to him. So that's how the two of them know, because she's in this network with him trying to get this message out. So it just that worked out great. And Roger Bartlett, Jimmy Buffett's very first guitar player, saw the show and he called me up. He says, hey, I'd love to be on the show. Well, Roger, how about I met Roger a few years ago in Key West. I said, hey, Roger, you know, when I met you, you were with Keith Sykes. Any chance the two of you would do the show? And that steamrolled into him, Keith, and Mike Utley. And it just was like, what the heck is going on here? Where are all these? I mean, really? And everybody was like, all of a sudden, now I was on the map. I mean, the Scott Kirby show, when we finished, we had, I think, 700 views. And by midnight that night, we were over 1,000. When I interviewed the mayors, as we shut off the show, we were at 2,500 views. And I think that one's kind of approaching 10,000 right now. And the Mike Gutley one, I think when we finished that show, we were at like 2,600 or almost 3,000. And every week changes with the viewers, but it's funny because we could end like with 300 after the show. And by lunch on Saturday, the next day, we could be at like 1,000. So it's the word's getting around.
Because everyone can't always watch like live, but because they're posted, and for anyone who hasn't seen the show, go check it out. You can find it on the Boomer Blake and the Shore Break Facebook page.
Right. That's my artist page.
Exactly. Yeah. So go watch it. And it is posted after. So it's not like if you can't watch it live, that's too bad for you. You missed it.
We keep it there.
Episodes are posted. So you can go and watch it. So I'm sure like me, not everyone can watch it on Friday night, but that doesn't mean that, you know, they don't go and watch it later in the weekend. So.
Right. And my wife's done a really good job with my website. It's finally is functional, but she's actually posted, I think she posted all of my shows to my website. So if you wanted to go back and see like the Scott Kirby interview or the mayors, you can definitely go back and see them at boomerblake.com.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, I was going to say I had somebody because I people who listen to my show like sometimes write me and be like, "Hey, you should interview this person, you should interview this person." And somebody was like, "You should interview Scott Kirby." And I am not against that, but also it sounds like he already did an amazing interview with you. So if in the meantime, if people want to go check that out, if they're want to hear some Scott Kirby interview, it sounds like that was a really good one.
I got really lucky because like Scott, I mean, it's Scott's a great storyteller. And he's had so many great experiences on his own and with the coral reefers. And I mean, in his history, I mean, one of his very first influences who approached him at a bar was Shel Silverstein, the author. I mean, this guy, when you really listen, find out about this guy's background, he's such a really cool fella. But I love his tunes. I mean, I became a fan of his years ago. Freddie had turned me on to him. And he's a very close friend with Peter and Brendan Mayer. The three of them. Do a lot of touring together as Mayor Kirby Mayor. He's really a sharp guy. I mean, I'm sure he's got more stories than what we were able to touch on. So if you can reach out to him, I would highly suggest the interview. Do it.
Well, I definitely have found that, and obviously this didn't happen to me with the coral reefers, but I have found that once you start doing interviews, the people that you interview are like, oh, then you should interview this. Like, oh, I have someone great for you to interview. Like, hey, you should talk to this person. And it kind of just like builds on its own. And pretty soon you just have like a people lined up that want to do it. And you didn't even really have to try to get people.
That's the kind of like the cool part too, is I'm not just getting fans watching, but my fellow artists are watching the show too. And like, I think it was after I interviewed the mayors, Bob Carwin wrote to me, he said, you know, I'd love to be on that show. And I was like, really? I was like, that's fantastic. Yeah, you're on that show. No problem.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? It blows you off.
Yeah, I think that's so great. Cool. And I'm sure the artists, like, because like you said, you do have kind of, you didn't use this expression, but sort of that green room feel, right? The kind of conversation that is happening backstage where the musicians are hanging out together. And I'm sure that's really appealing to musicians who watch the show and then are like, oh, well, this is kind of just like what it's like when we're shooting the shit on our own, you know?
And, yeah, it's completely what it is. And you know what's cool too is, I mean, like I had an interview one night. I did a fan, one of the radio DJs and an artist, and I actually had Bill Bremma, and I reached out to Johnny Russell. I said, hey, do me a favor, crash the party, like around 7:30, 7:45, like toward the end of my show, just like dial in and crash it. And he did. But what was so cool is like a lot of times with this setup, I can actually sit back sometimes and let my guests take over. And it's really cool because like, I had one of the DJs had some questions for Johnny about recording, and it kind of started taking on a life of its own. And it, I, for a moment during the show, I just kind of sat back and crossed my arms and I was like, this is great. I'm not doing anything. And this has taken a life of its own. This is so awesome. And, you know, that's the other part of the show is there's no ego. There's no, I got to be up front and be the star of the show. It's nothing like that. My guests are the stars. And it's just so cool to be there and talk with them and have fun.
Well, I think that's probably comes from the fact that you're a musician too. And I mean, like everyone, at least all the trap rock musicians I've met all seem like pretty chill. Like no one is like, it's never really feels like a competition
between
the musicians. It's like, there's kind of this camaraderie. And I'm not saying that if you weren't a musician, you would want to be front and center, but you know, I feel like that's just kind of the spirit of like the trap rock musicians is like, we're all kind of in this together and, friends.
That's something I've said. My very first trip, I mean, I've been doing this now. My music came out on trap rock radio. I think that we're at like 6 years ago now. And my first trip to Meeting of the Minds in Key West was in 2017. And I was so amazed by the camaraderie and just the supportiveness from the other musicians. I mean, you always hear nightmares about Nashville and how cutthroat it is and all that. But with the trap rock musicians, a lot of them have been through the whole Nashville ringer. And you know, it's so amazing when you can be walking down the street with your guitar down Duval Street and you'll hear, like it happens to me all the time. Donnie Brewer will be up on stage at Willie T's and be like, you'll hear over the microphone, hey, Boomer, get up here. And like you run up on stage and you're singing backup with him and Mike Nash or Erica Sunshine Lee calls me out. And that's the way it is everywhere. And Danny Rosato, when we teamed up, he introduced it to me. We played our first gig together at Blue Heaven. And there was a new musician out that we had just met. And during our break, we were like, hey, dude, grab the guitar and go up and play. And he said, seriously? We're like, yeah, that's what this whole thing is. We share our stage. And the more we share our stage and share our opportunities to get out in front of an audience, the better off we're going to be as a genre. And we're going to grow the genre. And we've made so many good friends that way. And it's so cool because you notice that now when we see each other on the street, though, it's always a hug. It's a, hey, man, thanks so much for that. I'll never forget it. And everybody, hey, next, if I'm up on stage and I see you guys, please come up and play something. Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to. And I really hope that people start to see that about trap rock, that we're trying to take a page from Jimmy Buffett's book, I think, where Jimmy pretty much included us in his life through his lyrics and through his stories. And, you know, that's kind of what trap rock is that we're trying to share our experiences and share our fun and excitement about this with the audience and bring the audience in. And that means hanging out on the sidewalk outside Willie T's, drinking a beer with everybody and talking about our upcoming shows or songs. And it's just become such an awesome community. I think somebody said it the best. This is one of the few genres where the fans are just as popular as the musicians. And it's really true. I mean, when you go to like Meeting of the Minds and you're hearing super fan Fred Wonder's name being yelled. He's not even an artist, but he's a super fan. He's a supporter of our genre. And people are yelling his name up the street. Like nobody cares Boomer Blake's there. Hey, check it out. They're Fred Wonder. I'm like, hey, what? Did you notice Fred, not me? What? I mean, it's just that awesome though.
Yeah, it really, you really feel like you're friends with it. Like as a, not a musician, but like as a fan, you know, you hang out, you watch one show, you hang out with musician one time, and it's like the next time they see you, they're like, oh my God, like as if you're like best friends.
Yeah, totally.
And that's really awesome because it encourages people to get into the music, I think. So even people who maybe don't know what trap rock is or, you know, have heard of it, but are like, well, that doesn't seem like it's for me or something. If you could get those people to a show and like get them to experience that, like really being so involved with the music and so involved with the musicians and just like the fact that you can talk to them and everything. Like, I think that's a big plus for the genre that people don't really understand until they sort of get to a show, you know what I mean? And so that's, I think if we can get people to house concerts that have never been to a house concert, you know, it's, I think it really catches on very quickly once someone experiences it. They're like, oh, like maybe I didn't think this was my favorite music ever, but like now that I'm listening to it live and like chatting with the musician afterward, that's a thing that doesn't really happen in other genres. So,
well, you know, and I mean, trap rock is escapism music. I mean, if you like Jimmy Buffett, if you like Kenny Chesney, if you like Zac Brown, if you like the Beach Boys, if you like, I go back to even Christopher Cross's song Sailing, which is like my all time favorite song. Yeah. I mean, if you like music that has something to do with the beach, with the tropics, with escaping the rat race, that's what trap rock is. And it's very similar to, I don't consider it a copycat of Jimmy Buffett's music, but I do consider it an extension of his music. And I consider it, I mean, like trap rock to me, I kind of said it jokingly a while back, but it's kind of like the music, it's that fresh music that you are longing for between Buffett albums. Because let's put it this way. I mean, the new album Jimmy put out was his first studio album in 7 years. Right. So what were we listening to for 7 years? We were listening to all those stinking live albums that he put out. Holy crap. Another live album. I was getting ready to strangle myself. But I mean, we are the fresh beach music and rum drinking music that you kind of can listen to between those albums. We're the backyard concert that holds you over till the next time Jimmy comes to town, or, you know, it really does kind of fill in the gaps. And, you know, I asked the mayors this when I interviewed them. I said, guys, you know, a lot of us kind of think we're going to be the ones carrying the torch when Jimmy finally decides to retire. And I said, you know, what are your thoughts on that? You know, I don't want you to speak on Jimmy's behalf, but personally. And Jim Mayer said, I'll tell you right now, he goes, you guys are already carrying the torch. He said, I've shared the stage with you guys. I've listened to your music. I follow the radio stations. He said, the music's good. It's high quality. It's radio ready. It's highly, it's high standard produced. A lot of guys still go to the studios in Nashville and pay top of the line musicians to produce their albums. My producer, Anthony Kryzan, he was lead guitar player for the Spin Doctors. And he's got a gold record with Lenny Kravitz. He's got multiple awards. He's played with the greatest rock and roll musicians ever. And Anthony, he's 20 minutes away from my house, and he's been producing all of my songs since the beginning. I think there's two songs he didn't produce for me, Smooth Whiskey Weekend and Down by the Coastline. But everything else I've done, it's been him. And, you know, we've got some of the greatest, we've got great singers and great songwriters and great musicians. And it's just fun too. And none of them pack up their guitars and leave after a show. They all put it down in the stand and they get down off the stage and they come into the audience and have a beer with you and bullshit and have a great time and want to get to know the fans. And you don't get that anywhere else.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned the production thing, because as a fan and also not a very musically talented fan, I never really thought much about album production before. Like, it was kind of just like, oh, I like this music. Right. But the more that I talked to the actual musicians on the show, like when I interviewed Bob Carwin, we talked a lot about how Donnie Brewer produced his album. And then when I talked to Tiki Tom Starkey, he talked a bunch about how like production is really important. And it's funny because like, I'm sure there's other fans that are much more on top of that and could be like, oh, this is a badly produced album. This is a well-produced album.
Right.
But I think a lot of the fans are, you know, are going to probably like it no matter what, because it's like a style of music. But it's to your point that most of it is really well produced, and that's because like the musicians care about that and they're going to do their best to make the best possible album they can, even if the fans maybe wouldn't know the difference. Right.
Well, and you know, I sometimes wonder if that's what turns people off about trap rock, because in the beginning there was a lot of bad stuff. And there still is some music out there that needs to get better. But I think a lot of people, when they think of trap rock, they think, oh, it's a bunch of guys that are probably like putting music together in their basement on an old tape recorder. And it's really not what it is. I mean, and even Donnie produces his stuff out of his RV because he's on the road 24/7 full time. But Donnie Brewer's productions are outstanding.
Yeah.
They're pretty much, and he's producing for other artists now. And he, I mean, he plays multiple instruments. I mean, the guy's so freaking talented, but like, I think the biggest thing that bothers me is like when I go to Parrothead events and I, excuse me, and I ask people, you know, where do you listen to your music? And everybody goes, oh, Radio Margaritaville. I'm like, listen, you have no idea that there's like 10 or 15 radio stations out there that are free. They're commercial free and they're dedicated to not just playing trap rock, but they play Bob Marley. They play Jimmy Buffett. They play a whole mix of stuff. But yeah, you're going to get a little bit heavier dose of trap rock, but you're going to hear Corey Young. You're going to hear Boomer Blake. You're going to hear Robin Tricker and Brent Burns, the legendary Brent Burns. You're going to hear Mac McAnally. You're going to hear Peter Mayer's studio stuff, which I think is some of the greatest stuff out there. And that's the thing that drives me nuts. Like, everybody wants to listen to Radio Margaritaville, which I get it. I mean, it's got some good stuff, but it's so commercialized now. And it's so much about commercials and making money that it's not like these free radio stations that are out there just because these DJs and these station owners have the passion. It's like you do your podcast because you're passionate about getting out there and bringing a message to people. And that's what these guys do. They spend the money every year that major market radio stations don't have to spend. These guys spend the money every year and it's a few grand to be able to have the permission to play licensed music on the internet and on the radio. I mean, they take a big hit financially to be able to bring these stations, and you're going to hear Boomer Blake music. You're going to hear all these great beach tunes and rum drinking tunes and pirate tunes. And it's just fantastic stuff. I really wish more people would try to just explore it, find it out. There's such great stations.
Yeah. I think that part of the problem is that there's still a whole swath of Jimmy Buffett fans that, you know, maybe aren't in the club, like the Parrothead Club. They don't really even necessarily know that all of this other music exists, because like for me, and I've said this before, but like I was a fan of Jimmy Buffett. Then I joined the Parrothead Club because I was a fan of Jimmy Buffett. And that's what the club was to me, right? Like Jimmy Buffett. Right. And then because I joined the club, I discovered all of this other music through the club. So if there's like Jimmy Buffett fans out there that don't really know about any of that, like they're going to listen to Radio Margaritaville because that's the only radio station they've heard of, because that's like the Jimmy Buffett associated one, because it's the big one in Margaritaville. Right. So like if we can, but that's not to say that they wouldn't enjoy the other trap rock radio stations. It's just that they haven't broken into that circle where they've even probably heard about them. So like if we can get some of those people in, and part of what I'm hoping with this podcast is by having some episodes about trap rock and some episodes about other escapism related things, right? So like basically it's my podcast is anything to do with escapism, anything that might be related to the lifestyle inspired by Jimmy Buffett.
Right.
So like maybe they listen for a Jimmy Buffett episode, or they listen for a, you know, Caribbean travel episode. But then because they've listened to that, they listen to the next episode, which is Boomer Blake. And they're like, oh, hey, like I've never heard of this guy. I've never heard
of this existed.
Radio stations. And then maybe they check it out. So that's kind of like we need to get, you know, more ways to like get those. Because I think part of the problem is like, people, there's a bunch of people out there who like Jimmy Buffett and just have no idea any of this other stuff is going on.
Well, and that's the funny thing. Like so many like people that are diehard Radio Margaritaville fans actually have absolutely no idea that they are listening to trap rock. Margaritaville started years ago playing the Detentions. Danny and Chris, what was it? Coast, one of my favorite songs that they do. They started playing that years ago. I think Corey Young's on there now. You're hearing Donnie Brewer on there. You're hearing a lot of trap rock artists being played on there now. And a really exciting thing, all of the trap rock artists got together recently and did they did a big giant video for Trap Rock Strong. And I think they were singing Bob Marley's One Love. And it's now being played in all of the Margaritaville restaurants. And it's every single trap rock artist, and people are going like, even I think one of the executives from Margaritaville called us up and was like, I did not know there were that many artists out there. This community is fantastic. And we're like, yeah, we're the ones that we're hoping people realize are going to be carrying that torch when Jimmy retires. And there's some great music. And that's actually funny thing is that video is maybe, I don't even think it's like a third of the awesome musicians that are out there. I mean, we've got Paul Overstreet now, who's Paul Overstreet's written for some of the greatest country music acts in country. And he's got fantastic albums. He's a close friend of Jimmy Buffett's. He's in Trop Rock now. And it's just, there's so much great stuff going on. And the Coral Reefers consider, there's a few of them that consider themselves Trop Rockers. That we've shared the stage with Peter Mayer and Uncle Jim. And they show up to Meeting of the Minds. And you'll see them out on the street. I tell you, I have seen Nadira Shakur on the sidewalk outside of Willie T's at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I've seen her get up on stage and sing with a few of the artists. This is a big, loving, awesome music community, and I hope people start to discover it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the video because it is a really, I think it's Three Little Birds, isn't it?
Oh yeah, that might be it.
I just want to make sure because if we're telling people to go look for it, they won't find it if they look for the other thing.
If they look up Trop Rock Strong, I think that will be the thing that.
Yeah, Trop Rock Strong video. But yeah, and there's, like you said, there's so many musicians on that video, and it's not even like. Yeah, it's just a fraction of the Trop Rock musicians that are out there, but that video is so well done. And it's just a testament to like you said, like the like production and editing, like that must have taken so much work. I'm like still in awe of how much editing work that must have taken because
and that was Donnie Brewer, Tom Shepard, and John Patty pretty much held the reins on that one. And I think even the production work, I think Donnie did.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's another name, Tom Shepard. If anybody ever heard the song Riding with Private Malone or Redneck Yacht Club, Tom's a Trop Rocker.
Right.
Tom and Coley. I mean, there's another big name that's in our genre. Yeah. I mean, the work that they did on that video, the fact that they got all those people to be able to put, participate in it. And the great thing is, too, it's not all musicians. It's musicians. It's super fans. It's people who coordinate and run the big Trop Rock events. It was the community that was involved in that video, not just musicians. Yeah. But it was so well done. It's a great representation of our genre.
Yeah, I think it's really great to have that to show people who maybe don't know what Trop Rock is or are, unsure about getting into it, because I think it really it shows the quality and scope of all the musicians we have. It shows that feeling of togetherness that the Trop Rock musicians, sort of have. And I think it's just like a really, and also like, it just looks like it clearly took a lot of work. And
yeah.
So I think it's a really great introduction, and it's really nice that is out there now. Not just for us who already love those things, but to show people or to try and, like you said, like get it out there, play it Margaritaville or other places. And maybe people will see it and be like, oh, wow, what's this? Like, this is, this is really cool. And I got to check this thing out. So,
yeah. And I mean, it, for anybody who's listening right now going, well, I thought this was blaming on Buffett. Why are we talking about Trop Rock? a lot of people, what they don't realize is there's a lot of us. Trop Rockers who were directly influenced by Jimmy Buffett's music. I mean, I used to sit when I got accepted to college down in Florida. I remember my first night being down there, and I put on Florida's, and I sat there and I said, wow, I finally made it to Florida. I finally made it down here. And I was listening to his tunes, and I always wanted to be able to write words that could take you to those places like his did. And I think that's the thing, people don't realize that deep connection we have sometimes with how much we love his music and just how it really does relate. And there, it's not just the old Trop Rock thing. And we are, a lot of us are diehard fans of Jimmy Buffett's music. I consider it all so related.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. And that's why I'm sure if anyone has listened to this podcast for a while, like I've had a good number of Trop Rock musicians on. So I don't think there's any misconceptions about trop rock being one of the things that this podcast is about for sure. Good. But, yeah, it definitely there's, and, you know, just to say it for people, because like not all trop rock musicians, you know, came from a place of loving Jimmy Buffett, and that's okay
too.
A lot of, them did. And a lot of us trop rock fans came from a place of loving Jimmy Buffett originally. And so, yeah, I would love to just talk about your, you know, Jimmy Buffett Parrothead fandom a little bit. Like, how did you, where did you first hear Jimmy Buffett? Like, how did you first get into him?
Well, it's funny. I mean, I'd always known about the song Margaritaville. But you know, through my youth, I really didn't listen to him a lot. I mean, I was born in 71 and I graduated high school in 1990. So I was an 80s kid. And I mean, like, you know, even going through high school, you know, my mom was a fan of pop music and R&B. My dad was a fan of the old doo-wop stuff. So I listened to pretty much everything. And everything from Bob Marley to Van Halen to Barry Manilow and Billy Joel. I mean, I listened to everything. It was funny. I was on a car ride to a college party, and somebody had Songs You Know by Heart in the cassette player. And I was like, "What are we listening to?" And she goes, one of the girls goes, "Jimmy Buffett." I said, "He's got all this great music too." I said, "I thought it was just Margaritaville." And I mean, we listened, you know, He Went to Paris is on that album. And I was like, I got to listen to this stuff. So I went to the store, and that was obviously the first album I bought. But the second album I bought was Florida's. And this was in the early 90s. And I was just, it was funny because I had just gotten accepted to the University of Central Florida. So I had gotten my acceptance letter. Then I went to the store. And I was looking through his albums, and Florida's kind of like punched me in the face. I was like, well, I got to buy that now.
Yeah.
So I fell in love with that album. And then it just kind of steamrolled. And I went to my first Buffett concert right around that time. I think it was like 91 or 2. I got a friend of mine to just go to the Garden State Arts Center and scalp tickets. And he was trying to sell them for like a couple $100 each. I said, "Listen, dude, I got $50. And he goes, "Well, that's not enough." I said, "Look, the show started already. You're not going to sell them. Just take my money." So little did I know, I got 10th row from the stage for $50. And that was my very first experience seeing Jimmy live. And I was in love. It was the greatest. And yeah, I just started buying albums and listening to him more and studying his lyrics. And we always loved beach music. I mean, I was a Beach Boys fan since I was a kid. Anything that had to do with the beach or sailing or escapism was always my favorite kind of music. And I mean, that was Jimmy's entire career, was writing stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much where it started, was just that little car ride to a good old college party back in the early 90s. And I've been hooked ever since.
That's such an awesome way to discover. I feel like that story is like, if we could just get every person who likes songs about the beach but doesn't realize like what Jimmy Buffett's catalog is, to like have that car ride, right? Like that would be, that would be the thing. Then like, I mean, not that Jimmy Buffett doesn't have a lot of fans, but especially like when people are younger, right? Like it's sort of the age you were to have that kind of experience. Like that's experience that we need people to have to like keep the fandom going, I think, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what the thing is, when you go back to those old albums, and it's funny too, because like he'll even say like those first albums he did where he was sounded a lot more country and he sounded a lot more influenced by like the Beatles and stuff. I mean, when you run out of Jimmy Buffett beach songs to listen to, you find yourself going to the earlier albums because you just want to hear new, fresh Buffett stuff that you never heard before and be told new stories. There's so much good stuff that he's got and such great stories. I mean, I Wish Lunch Could Last Forever is probably one of my favorite songs. My absolute favorite, the Off to See the Lizard album, Why the Things You Do, is my absolute go-to Buffett song. I used to drive the 18-hour drive from Orlando back to New Jersey where I live. And I had two cassettes. One was Off to See the Lizard, and the other was Robin Williams at the Metropolitan Opera House. And I would basically flip-flop those cassettes for 18 hours. But Off to See the Lizard is always my go-to. I love that album. I can listen to it over and over again.
I love that because I also had the Off to See the Lizard cassette. It was the first Jimmy Buffett album that I really remember listening to when I was like a little kid. And I had, you know, my little Walkman and I would just listen to that. I had like that and like a Fraggle Rock cassette. And those were like the two cassettes that I listened to in my Walkman when I was like six or whatever. So I love, yeah, we definitely have something in common there for sure.
Well, yeah, and, you know, it's funny because he jokes about how people are raising their kids on this music. And, you know, when my daughter was born, my wife wanted to have, we had the box set, Beaches, Boats, Bars, and Ballads. We had it playing in the delivery room. Uh-huh. And yeah, and in fact, it's funny because my poor daughter, we tortured her because when she went to start going to school, kids are asking her, you know, oh, what's your favorite song? Come Monday. What song? Come Monday.
It's Jimmy
Buffett. You don't know who Jimmy Buffett is? What are you, a loser? that was her in daycare. And I mean, it's just, you know, that's what it was. I mean, we were so consumed with his tunes and, we're raising our kids on that music and it's amazing. A guy's 75 years old, I think now. And he's got all this great catalog of music. That's why I said when I interviewed Mike Utley, I said, Mike, I'm just a Parrothead, a Jimmy Buffett fan ranting right now. I said, but Jimmy's got such a great catalog of music. Can we please stop playing cover tunes? The Brown Eyed Girl, I don't need to hear it anymore. I don't need to hear all this other stuff. Play some stuff for me, Mike. You got control of this thing. Could you please help us out? And he had this like look on his face like, oh, here we go, another fan. And I said, no, seriously, when he starts talking about the retirement tour, can we please play a bunch of B-sides? And like he's doing the songs you don't know by heart now.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, I want to hear the obscure stuff. I said, listen, if you guys want to play Margaritaville as an encore, go right ahead. You got my blessing. But oh, man. I mean, even what was it? Even the Marys. Peter said, yeah, he said one day we were on stage and Jimmy looked at us all and he goes, all right, if there's one song that you don't want to play tonight, what is it? And I think when he got to Finn's, I think like Peter said, like 10 of them, like everybody raised their hand, like we're sick of that one. Can we play something else? And it's just like, you know, even the choir reefers get sick of certain songs too.
Yeah.
Mike just looked at me weird, but I said, okay, I know I'm just ranting. I said, but a boy can dream.
The thing is, like, I totally feel you. And obviously, like, as big fans of Jimmy Buffett that know a lot of his extended catalog, like, we are like, well, we want to hear all these other songs, right? But I was talking about this with someone else recently. It's just like, you know, he has to remember the songs. So like, you can't really blame him for playing the same, like four or five songs.
He's got a teleprompter now. I think that became the funniest part of his doing the live albums was waiting for the songs where he screwed up his own lyrics.
Well,
all the live albums, I used to play that game sitting here and go, oh, wait, here it comes. This is where he says the wrong words.
I love the thing you mentioned, the songs you don't know by heart thing he's doing now, which I absolutely love. I'm so into that, especially because the song he played this past week was my number one top song that I wanted him to play for that series. And I didn't think he was going to do it. Something So Feminine About a Mandolin.
Oh, I missed that. Oh,
yeah. Oh, it's so good. I'm just going to go on a little bit of a tangent for a second because this week's, it was so good. Obviously I was very biased because it was literally the number one song I wanted him to play for this series. And secondly, it's so funny. So his daughter Delaney is directing these videos and she clearly has a great sense of humor because there's this whole bit where they like call because his wife Jane was co-write on the songs, but he like can't remember. So they like call her on the phone and they have this whole back and forth that's really funny. And then he messes up halfway through the song and he's like, okay, I'm going to just start back like at the chorus or whatever. We'll just cut that part out. But like Delaney definitely does not cut it out.
Oh no. In fact, when they did the Captain and the Kid one, she was calling him out. It was great. She's like, no, you've only played this like seven times. He goes, I played it more than that. She goes, uh-uh. I got the stats right here.
Yeah, it's so good. I love that, like, they're not making them perfect. I love to see, because he hasn't played a lot of these songs in a really long time. So I really love that they're like, it's okay if he like messes up and has to start over, you know? Because like, it's so endearing and it's so just like relaxed. And I don't know, it's really everything that I would, am excited to see out of Jimmy Buffett, like that you don't get to see when you go to like a concert or whatever that's more polished, right? Because they play the same however many songs every tour.
Right. So. But you know what's cool is it's kind of funny because if you really pay attention, it's almost like he's rediscovering his old music.
Right. And it's awesome.
It's a really cool thing to watch because, he knows all these tunes. He knows the stories behind how he wrote them. But it's so cool to see him see them play them again. And we long for that stuff. If I'm going to pay that much money for a ticket, I would love to pay for a ticket where he sat and just played tunes like that. It would be I know it'd be a hard show to get into, but oh my God, I mean, hearing him play those tunes and I was a big fan of the Riddles in the Sand album, and Bigger Than the Both of Us and Burn That Bridge When We Come to It. There's so many love great Burn That Bridge things, yeah. So many, please bypass this heart. Great freaking song.
maybe now that he's like sort of rediscovering some of these older songs that he hasn't played in a long time, like maybe some of them will click and he'll be like, oh, maybe we should bring this back. Like maybe we should play this song. That's my hope, is that maybe one or two of these like old songs that he just like hasn't played live forever, he'll sort of remember that it's there and be like, oh, maybe we should play this on tour.
Like, I'll tell you, he has to go, all famous guys like him have to follow a certain rule, which is you got to play the songs that pay the bills. And I totally get that. But, I find sometimes that when I go to the show, I don't feel like he's playing to the actual fans of Jimmy Buffett music. I think he's just playing to the people that just wanted to come to the concert. And he's kind of giving them the usual buffet of songs. And, when the Grateful Dead used to tour, none of their shows were the same. Dave Matthews, his shows aren't always the same.
Oh,
everybody goes to see oh my God, which one of my favorites is going to play tonight? And, I know it might be tougher for Jimmy, and I'm not going to speak for him, but I know that they've got their big set list that they have so that they don't have to rehearse so much. They can show up, put the show on and do their thing. But it would be cool if like every now and then, maybe he just like went back and really dug in and he's got so many freaking talented people on that stage. He could point at three of his guitarists and say, look, listen, tomorrow night, I want to play this one, this one, and this one. And just back, he could totally do that. He's got the most ridiculously talented people on the planet. And I know they're all so busy because they have gigs outside of what they do with him. But it'd be cool to see some of that stuff come back out. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think the difference between him and like some of the other musicians you just mentioned are like Dave doesn't really have casual fans that are like, oh, I really like Ants Marching, so I'm gonna like go to a Dave Matthews concert. Like Jimmy Buffett is kind of unique in that because his music inspires this party style, he has fans that go to the concert because they kind of know the hits, but also they just want to party, right?
They just want to tailgate.
which that's a thing too. Like as a hardcore Buffett fan, I try not to be judging. Like if people are going to the concerts, if they're supporting Jimmy Buffett, if they only know the hits, like that's better than nothing, So like,
oh, yeah, right.
But it's kind of like the other musicians don't really have that fan base that come like if you're going to a Dave Matthews concert, like you're really into Dave Matthews, like nobody really just like goes to a Dave Matthews concert because they know like one Dave Matthews song or whatever. But there are people that probably go to Jimmy Buffett concert because they know Margaritaville and it's going to be a good time. So it's like, I understand like it's a unique situation, but I agree that like, if he never plays Brown Eyed Girl again, I would be totally okay with that.
Yeah. Right. I'm with you.
Yeah, like, it's not even a Jimmy Buffett song. It's like, okay, you have to play Margaritaville. I understand. But like, Brown Eyed Girl isn't even a Jimmy Buffett song, so we could just like get rid of that one.
And Southern Cross, I mean, it fits his style, but it's like that's another, like right there, we just opened the show up to two new songs. Okay, Jimmy, if you're listening, let's X those two out. Aaliyah and I said, you have permission. You have permission. Dump the cover tunes. And we just made room for it. Now, what are we going to put in there?
I think your problem there is that I think Southern Cross is going to be a lot harder sell, because that one, I think, is a big favorite of even a lot of people that are like harder core Jimmy Buffett fans.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people that really love Southern Cross. So that one might be a little harder to get rid of, but I think Brown Eyed Girl for sure. We could lose that one.
All right. If I only get one,
I mean, I would be fine if he didn't play Southern Cross. I like that song, but like you said, it's not, I'd rather hear like a Jimmy Buffett song, but I think there's a lot of like really big Southern Cross played by Jimmy Buffett fans.
So. I mean, hey, look, if it all falls down, you can play that one. No playing on Sunday. I mean, look, God, there's so many.
There's a million. I know. There's a million really good.
We could come on and do this forever. Christ.
Well, we'll just have to settle for the Songs You Don't Know by Heart series for now, which I'm glad. Like, that's, I'm so glad we're getting that. Like, that's a thing that never probably would have happened if it weren't for COVID, you know, like silver lining, I guess, of a horrible thing that's happening in the world is like we're getting to hear songs played by Jimmy Buffett that he hasn't played in, you know, 25 years or whatever. So
I gotta, you know, I have to agree with you on that, because this year started out so horrible. And I mean, like for my family, I mean, we lost my dad in February, and then COVID started. Well, he was suffering from cancer, but it's like it started off so terrible. And it's weird, because, you know, I said to my wife the other night, I was like, you know, for all the terrible things that have happened, I said, there's also been some really silver lining good things. And she goes, like, what? I said, well, for one thing, I've got a new talk show. I've interviewed 6 of the Coral Reefers. And I said, I've got a new single coming out. And, you know, I mean, not just me, but there are other people out there in the world who have had some weird silver lining moments because of this. Because we've been locked at home, and people have had to come up with creative things to do or creative things. I said, so yeah, there's been a lot of tragedy. I'm not overshadowing that, but it just, there's also been some really wild, bright moments too, if you really step back and look. And yeah, like this, like Jimmy and all these famous people that are doing these Zoom concerts for the frontline people. When would you ever be able to, like, on your lunch break, turn on Zoom and have Tim McGraw talking to you?
Right.
And singing a song to you, or Jimmy Buffett singing a song to you, or, I mean, there have been some really wild things happening. And my father always taught us to kind of try to look at the bright side, and it might be an Irish thing too. We always look for the silver lining. But I think, you know, amongst all the tragedy and the craziness, there have been some really good silver lining moments, I think, this year that we can't overlook.
Yeah. And even just with, you know, trap rock musicians, like I've gotten to hear some of the trap rock musicians I really like play so many times, where normally I might get to hear them play once in a year, because it would be like if they come for a house concert. And now it's like, you know, they have a virtual show every week or every few weeks or something. And as a fan, like, I know it's not exactly the same as being there in person, but like as a fan, it's still sort of like a live show, and it's been really awesome to get to hear them play more, you know, in a way that like you really wouldn't have if this whole situation hadn't happened this way. So like you said, like it's not, if still overall it would be better if COVID had never happened, obviously, but
100% agree.
Some projects have come out of it for people, like Boomer's Basement probably wouldn't have happened, you know, and
yeah,
stuff like that. So, and also it's not in your basement though. Right.
Well, so here's the funny thing. It did start in my basement.
Okay, I thought it was originally it, but then I was watching the more recent ones because I haven't seen the older ones, and I was like, wait a minute, this isn't a basement.
Well, so once the weather gets crappy up here in New Jersey, I will definitely be going back into the doldrums of my basement.
That makes sense.
But no, when the weather got nice, it's funny. I did one show on a nice night, and from the basement. And I came up to the tiki bar. I was like, what the hell am I locking myself down there for? I said, it can be called Boomer's Basement and not actually done there. So I was like, I'm coming out to the tiki bar. And I sit at my tiki bar. I've got my mascot, Harold Splinterfoot, my plastic skeleton. He sits behind me. We got a little bit of merch hanging from the wall behind me. But I'll stay out here until the weather gets crappy. And then we'll go back.
I forgot you're in a place where it gets cold. Sometimes I wish I was in the middle of summer when it's like 107 degrees like it is today in Arizona. But
and what'll be really funny is, you know, there'll be one, we'll get one probably Friday in October or November where maybe the weather gets into the 50s. I might look at my wife and go, I know the tiki bar's naked and everything's put away, but let's do it out there anyway. It'll be just fun.
But yeah, because it's like warm.
And I love it out here. I mean, this is like my happy place. I come out and we had a party out here yesterday, and it's just, I love the backdrop. Actually, we might try to do one of those cool special effects thing where we take a picture and blue screen it or green screen it behind me for future shows. I don't know.
That'd be fun. I'm
not very technical. If anybody's watched my show, they've seen some of the most fantastic technical blunders on the face of the earth. And I mean, like I was telling you earlier, Friday night show, I got kicked off of my own show. Our internet died, and my three guests were so professional. They took over while we figured out how the hell to get me back on screen. I mean, it was the technical bloopers actually have become a character in my show. I think it's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever seen that that guy on the sports channel that does the fishing show, and almost every episode he ends up falling out of the boat into the water.
That's awesome.
Pretty much me. I find my ways of falling out of the boat during my show.
Well, I think it's not all on you, because I will say Facebook Live, those hangout things are not like the most reliable.
I don't think
it's all your fault.
The one that I'm using Be Live, and a lot of folks are using it. And I'm not 100% unhappy with it. It's taken some, you definitely need a learning curve with it. But since Facebook doesn't let you interview multiple guests anymore, I had to find something like this to do it. And, but every now and then it's like, what the hell's going on here? It's part of the technology. Look, if I can watch Jimmy Buffett do a Zoom, interview with, all of his, coral reefers, and Peter Marin, Mike Gutley both said, listen, as technical as a lot of us are, when we do a Zoom meeting scheduled for 7, we're lucky if all the coral reefers get on by 7:45, because they can't figure out their technology. And I watched Channel 4 News last night. They were doing an interview and the guy's internet crapped out. So, hey, it happens to everybody.
Yeah, it's definitely. And like, I use Zoom a lot for work before COVID, but so it wasn't really an issue for me. So like, to me, it seems like, oh, Zoom's really easy to use. But like, we had like a Parrothead Club meeting for my club, and like some of the people in my club had never used Zoom before, so it was like, you know, we're trying to get it figured out for them, like make sure they can hear us and everything. So it's definitely like a learning curve for all that kind of stuff, but you know, now that this situation has happened, more people will know how to use it, so that might be good going forward. We might get more continuation of these kinds of shows and these kinds of interviews and ways to interact in the future, when now that everybody maybe knows how to use the technology a little bit more because of the situation. So
yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, honestly, I didn't know what I was doing with my first few shows, actually the first few weeks. And luckily my wife's really, she's super smart. She's the brains behind my show. And I mean, if I didn't have her here now as my co-producer, I call her the producer, because she sits in the kitchen while I'm out here at the tiki bar, and she reads all the comments and she feeds me really good questions from the audience and technical issues. I mean, the other night when I got kicked off the show, I sat here and I was like, what do I do? I really felt handcuffed. And luckily she said, don't worry about it, I got it figured out. And she went right to it and remedied the entire situation. And you know, when you're doing a show, you got a lot on your mind. Questions and what you want to get accomplished in the hour or whatever that you're doing your show. And she said, yeah, I need to try to take some of that off you so you can be your best on the show. And it's made my show 100 times better having her as my co-pilot. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And I think there's a little more leeway for that kind of shenanigans on a live show, right? So like, when you're something like a podcast or something where people expect that you've had time to edit it, I mean, I don't really edit it, but like, if you're like a professional, you like edit your show and that kind of thing. I think there's less room for error. People don't sort of allow for as much technical difficulty or whatever. But if you're doing like a live show, I think people understand that it's like, oh, well, this is live. You can't like fix things after the fact or whatever. It kind of adds to like, it's sort of endearing almost, right? It kind of adds to like the charm of the show. If it's like, we're just figuring it out.
Well, that's what my wife says. She goes, it's so funny because like, and you know, like we were talking about earlier, how close we all are with our fans. I mean, most of the fans that watch my show, I've met them all. I know them personally. Right, I've seen their houses. So, I mean, like, they're, oh, Boomer went for a drink. Where'd he go? All right, he's off the show. And she's like, they're busting my chops. And I'm like, I said to her, I said, it's a good thing I don't get embarrassed easy and I don't take things too seriously because then I'd be a mess. But, you know, I said this on stage once and I truly believe it, that if you can't laugh at yourself, you have no business laughing at all. And I truly believe that if you look in the mirror, some of the best entertainment is looking right back at you. And it's like, and I said to her, I said, look, I said, you can't laugh. If you can't laugh at yourself, you're just taking life way too seriously.
And, yeah, and you can't do a show like your show or even like my show if you don't have like that sense of humor to just be like, oh, well, this thing happened, you know, like if you're going to get upset about stuff like that, then like that's not the best kind of mentality to go into a project like that with. So
now listen, you know, just like in life, shit happens. So guess what? Yep. Pick up your pants and move on.
Well, you know? I will say, I know I said this to you, but I want to say it on the air in case anybody, I don't know if anybody will be listening to hear this, but I think so when, so the TRMAs are out right now, the nomination votes, and they were so nice. They emailed me and were like, we're going to include you in the, for a nomination. And I was like, I'm not a radio, because there's only really like a radio show category. And I was like, well, I'm not a radio show. I'm a podcast. And they were like, well, they like got back to me and I was like, so I'm cool. Thank you.
That's awesome.
They were like, they got back to me though. And they were like, well, we think you count for the podcast category, right? And I was like, or for the radio show category. And I was like, okay, well, that's really nice. Thank you. Like, I never would have. But I just want to say here that I think that your show should be nominated because A, it's really great. And B, it's like even, because my show has, I talk about trap rock a lot and I have trap rock musicians, but it's not exclusively trap rock. And I feel like your show is really, I mean, not that like every single thing you talk about is trap rock always, but it's, the focus is really like musicians. And then like you said, you have like mega fans on sometimes or people that are involved in that community in other ways. And I think, I guess, I don't know if it's too late, but I think your show should be nominated more than my show should be.
You know, it's funny. That's how you and I met with this, because it was when I did the show with Eric Babin from Radio Trap Rock a couple weeks ago. And we were talking about the TRMAs and he goes, well, Boomer. I said, what? He said, you forgot that there's all, you're talking about musicians, but you forgot that there's a radio category.
Oh, yeah.
And I said to myself, well, guess what? I said, Eric, I said, I apologize. I said, but you know what there is no category for is what I'm doing. I'm not nominated for anything. I was joking. But I said, you know, I said, I don't expect it because I think I invented my own medium because we've never had a live talk show, I think, in like this setup. But yeah. And then you text me that night saying they should switch my show for your show. And I was like, I looked at my wife and said, that is probably one of the sweetest, nicest things anybody could say, because I mean, and look, like I told you that night, I got to interview 6 coral reefers this summer. I am probably flying about as high as anybody could right now, awards or not. But I mean, seriously, that was so sweet of you to say that. And look, you know what? I can only be grateful. When I got into music, I had read somewhere that the key to success is a gratitude. And I have tried to be as gracious and grateful to every single person that has come across my path or helped my music or myself move in any direction. Like I said, this talk show started off kind of as a joke or as a mistake, and it has been another blessing because, I mean, it seems to be the thing that people are really talking about right now, which I am completely grateful for. My reward has been on Friday nights, I get to talk to some of my best friends in music. I've gotten to talk to coral reefers. I have had some great laughs. If nobody loves laughing more than I do. So, I mean, I've been able to have such a great time. And you know what? My big wish this year, honestly, more than anything, is to get a nomination for for my single that Danny Rosato and I put out last September, Down by the Coastline. If that gets a single of the year or song of the year nomination, I will be happier than anybody on the planet, because that's where my true passion is my music. And yeah. I told my wife, I'm a little worried. She goes, why? I said, well, what if people forget that I'm a musician? It's like, I'm not really the Johnny Carson of trap rock. I'm Boomer Blake, the singer songwriter. That's where my passion's been my whole life. But more than anything, the show's going to keep going on. If they make up a category for 2021, that'll be cool. But right now, my music's the most important thing. And like I said, Danny did such an amazing job producing this song for me. We've got Erica Sunshine Lee. We've got Christine Jackson. We've got Bob Banerjee playing fiddle on it. Jonas Lawrence's band is the main instruments on it. My producer Anthony is singing backup, and he helped me with my vocals. And it's my spiritual song about visiting the coastline and going to the beach, and like the rebirth that you feel when you go to the coastline. And it's been such a blessing, because I get every now and then I get texts from the fans saying, Boomer, thank you so much for writing this song. That's like the biggest reward you could ever get, is when somebody says something like that to you. And if anything happens at the TRMAs this year, I really hope that that song gets the recognition, because it's been such a great ride all year long since we released it last September, I think it was.
Well, it is on the nomination ballot. So for anyone that's a TRMA member, you should, I think those go out to all members, right? The nomination ballots.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody that's a member. And if you're not a member, you can join. If you go to Trap Rock, I think it's traprock.org. It's like $15 to be a member for the year. And you're basically a member and being a part of helping shape our genre, really, is what we consider it. I'm an Academy member now. I'll be a lifelong member. Along with a lot of some of the other artists, and it's just a really cool thing.
Yeah. So people, if you got that ballot, you can vote. And so the way it works is like it's the nomination ballot. So you're basically voting for which things you want to be on the final ballot that then will be the final vote. So, but that song is on there. So if you are a member, or if you're not, you can become one and you can go vote there. And yeah, I think that's really cool. And I love that song too. So it's hard, like, because I know a lot of the musicians. I mean, I guess this is true for like most people who are trap rock fans, like know a lot of musicians, but like I've interviewed them, like it's so hard to vote, 'cause I'm just like, I love all of these things.
Yeah. Well, and you think about it, when I'm voting, I'm friends with all these people. So me, I'm trying to be like, right. when I look at the ballot, I look at it as a musician. I'm like, okay, I could vote for my best buddy, but I also want to really be fair. And no, this song was really one of the best. I'm not talking about my own song, but just like if I'm thinking in general, like this female artist, I think she was such an awesome figure in trap rock this year. I'm putting her name down.
Yeah.
This musician is the one that stands out in my mind whenever I think of all the live shows I saw. This is the one that stood out. And I try to look at what was the song that made the most impact this year, which was the one that always was at the top of the charts, or that everybody was talking about, or that, what was the one that had the most impact? And I could probably think of a few of them that are up there that I think my songs fits evenly with. So, it's not an easy thing to do, but it's so cool to be able to be a part of it and nominate. And, I don't mind saying that even though I'm a little bit more gray-haired than some of the other folks, I'm still kind of a newbie. So I also fit the horizon category. Hint, 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 hint.
And some of the categories are – so some of the categories have like write-in. A list of nominations, but some are write-in. So people can still write in nominations for some things. And I will say that like I do think that having like a podcast/talk show category seems to be like, if you keep doing your show, like John has a trap rock podcast now.
Right.
My podcast is like kind of trap. I don't know. Like, I feel like this is a thing that's developing more now. So like maybe in coming years, it would be worth having a separate category for that over like so separate from radio show, because it's like kind of a different thing. But
you know, and I kind of think that, especially with the TRMAs, they you know, they're always evolving too. And Mark Friedman only took over the Trop Rock Music Association a couple of years ago, and over the course of these last couple of years, it has progressed forward in a gradual manner, which is what I expected. And I think he's doing a great job getting the message out about us, trying to streamline the way we do the Trop Rock Music Awards and different things. So, it's an evolution. I'm sure that will probably be something that we'll see different maybe on the ballads next year. There are only a handful of actual live shows. There's me. Tiki Man has his live show on Sundays. I know that Lyle Wilson does his live show Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on their station. So, I mean, but there's no one that does like a talk show like me.
Right.
So, yeah, there's, you can't just like nominate somebody for one category and give them the prize.
They could have done that for you. I would have been fine with it.
Next time we get a box in the mail, I'll make a cardboard cutout of what the TRMA award looks like. I'll just make my own. But like I said, though, I mean, this has been so cool. I mean, in a year that's been kind of tragic and sad, I keep thinking my dad's on my shoulder somewhere, or he's somewhere giggling. I mean, one of his favorite songs of mine was Living Loose in My Barefoot Shoes. And for the longest time, he'd say, why the hell isn't Jimmy Buffett doing this song? How do we get it in his hands? I was like, Dad, it doesn't work like that. But here I go. I get this talk show. I get to interview Mike Utley, Jimmy Buffett's number two guy. And after the show, I sent him a thank you. And I said, you know, Mike, I don't imagine you've ever heard any of my music, but this was one of my dad's favorites. And it was one that Jimmy inspired. And I said to my brother yesterday, I said, Craig, I said, I got that song about as close to Jimmy Buffett as I think I can. I gave it to his number two guy. I said, you know, somewhere dad's got to be giggling. And he says, hell yeah, he is. So, you know, I mean, this has been so cool. I don't know what's going to come of it. I don't know what the future of it is. Obviously, I would like to keep doing it, but it's just been fun. And I think that's really all the reward I could ask for.
Yeah, that's the important part, definitely. For doing anything like this is just, are you having a good time doing it? Great. That's the main thing. So
And you know what? You're making people smile and you're doing a positive thing. That's really, I think, the thing that matters the most. You're not putting any negativity into the world. And I get to talk about what I love the most, music. And we talk about Jimmy Buffett and we talk about Trop Rock and it's just fun.
Yeah.
And booze. We talk about rum.
Yeah.
Right. You gotta get your rum drink and just have a good time.
Yeah. Maybe by the time I get done editing and doing all the podcast stuff, it'll be about time for a drink here in my time zone.
There you go. We're with it. 1 o'clock here, 1:05 here in Jersey. So we're at lunchtime.
Before we go, I just wanted to, you know, we talked about your music a little bit, but I just want to mention you have a new single coming out, right? Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I'm really excited. It just got mastered. So once I get all the coding done, I'm hoping to distribute it to all the Trop Rock stations next week. But it's a song called Watching the River Go By. And it's a song I wrote a couple of years ago. I was kind of reflecting on growing up and working with my dad. My dad was a career firefighter in the city in Newark, New Jersey. But like most firefighters, he had a side business, a residential window cleaning business that eventually I took over. But I started working with him in that business, I think when I was like 11 or 12. And we grew up my father was able to raise us in a pretty well-to-do town here in Jersey. And I kind of call it my ungratefully grateful song, because it comes from the perspective of a pretty ungrateful young kid going to work with his dad, and kind of, we worked in these mansions and I still do. And you kind of look around and thinking to myself, well, God, they've got a Mercedes and a Jaguar and a pool. And look at the size of this house. Why can't we live like this? And as the song goes, I mean, it's just kind of me realizing as I grew up, really just what I had and what my dad really was teaching me. So I was kind of bummed that I never got to play it for him. And you know, I said to my wife, I said, look, I said, even if this isn't one of my most popular songs, I got to get this out of my system. I said, I'm going to the studio. We're going to put this down and we're going to just put it out there. But it's I'm really happy with the way it came out. I've got my younger brother, Ryan, singing as part of the backup harmonies. And I wrote it bluegrass. And when we went into the studio, Anthony goes, what if we throw a little reggae into this? I was like, okay, you're the gold record guy. Go for it. So it's almost a mishmash of like country, bluegrass, reggae. I said to him, I said, you know, at this rate, I said, you know, my next song, we should probably do like a heavy metal polka song. What do you think? I said, because we're mishmashing so many different genres. But it really did. I'm really proud of it. It came out really good. I hope other people dig it. And yeah, we'll be putting it out hopefully next week or the week after. We'll hopefully have it out at all the Trap Rock stations, watching the river go by.
Awesome. Well, I will definitely be on the lookout for that. I can't wait to hear it. I'm excited to hear what that mishmash of musical style sounds like. It sounds like it's going to be pretty cool. So
it really did come out cool. I'm kind of pumped about it. I played it for everybody last night here at the Tiki Bar, and one of my cousins was like, "You got to play that again. Play it again." I think we listened to it like five times.
Yeah. Well, must be good.
I'm pretty psyched. Yeah, we'll hopefully get that out soon.
Cool. But,
yeah, everything's going good.
Great. Everybody keep an eye out for that. And then do you want to mention your website again and any like social medias where people can find you or follow you?
Yeah. Well, I'm on Instagram I'm pretty active on Instagram. Actually, my daughter's taking it over, managing it for me because she's awesome at that. And we're trying to help her build a portfolio for college. So she's been running my Instagram page for me. Harold Splinterfoot, my cohort, he has his own page that, and he does converse with people during the show. If you want to check out Boomer's Basement, it's on Friday nights at 7 PM Eastern Standard Time, live on Facebook on my, Boomer Blake and the Shore Break page. My website, like I said, my wife did an awesome job revamping it. So, all of my merch, my music, the calendar of you know what we're doing or what shows are coming up, past shows, they're all on boomerblake.com. And you know, if you don't mind me mentioning, something I always end my show with, and I'd love to just say it to your audience too. If you want to really truly support independent artists, the best way to do it is to buy their music from them direct. We need Spotify and we need iTunes and all these other platforms to be able to offer our music to a bigger audience, but we make fractions of a cent. And I'm not joking, like fractions of 1 cent, for our music on those platforms. But if we're charging you 99 cents for a song on our website, we get almost that entire amount of money, and it helps us pay the bills. It helps us get back into the studio. It helps us pay to travel, to get out on the road and do backyard concerts and these events. So if you've got an artist that you love and you want to support, I just always ask people, please consider buying direct from the artist. Go to their websites and buy some merch, buy their tunes. It really goes a long way. And you want to talk about supporting small businesses? There ain't anything smaller than an independent artist. Yeah. So, please understand out there how grateful we are when somebody does buy something from us. It really does mean the world.
Well, and I'm still a big fan of CDs because I have like an old car that still has a CD player. So,
nice.
So I love having like that physical media, you know, I can just like pop in the CD player. So
yeah, it's amazing. People are still playing CDs. I can't get over how many I sell.
I never, like when I'm at a show or whatever, even though now a lot of artists have like digital versions of their music on like a flash drive or whatever, I always just buy the CD still, because that's like, I like having it. And then also, excuse me, I still do use them because I listen to them in my car. So yeah, I'm a fan. And actually, I'm a big fan of vinyl, and I know it's not like cheap to make, but if Trap Rock musicians started putting out vinyl records, I would buy every single one of them. So,
well, you know, I'll tell you, I was looking into it, and yeah, you can do it. They you know, a couple of the companies that we use that do it. But the thing is, the hardest thing about vinyl is just, you can't travel with it. Yeah, I mean, it, like if I got the choice of putting 50 t-shirts in a suitcase or a bunch of vinyl albums, I think I would probably just sell them off my website and mail them out.
Right. But, yeah, I think that's probably the way you'd have to do it.
Yeah, and even CDs are still easier to travel with than you can stick like 25 or 50 of them in your suitcase or a duffel bag and not even notice you're carrying them. But it goes along with trying to have to be a little bit strategic with all this merch, but right. I'm with you.
I know, though. I'm just dreaming.
I wouldn't mind buying my own, putting like one of my own vinyls up on a wall or something. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that's really feasible for most trap rock musicians, but if I just was throwing it out there that if anybody does make a vinyl record of trap rock music, I will definitely buy it. So,
hey man, well, now I at least know one person out there will buy it if I put it on the list.
One person, just do a pre-order and it'll be me, the one person.
That's okay. Well, you know what? Hey, maybe it'll get the ball rolling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too cool. Awesome.
Well, thanks so much for being on. I had a great time. I'm sure we could have chatted much longer, but
Try
to not take up too much of your time today. but yeah, I love watching your show and your music is great. And I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk with me.
Yeah. Well, Aaliyah, thank you so much for having me. Thank you for reaching out the other night. Like I said, it really meant a lot. Good luck with your show. I think it's killer. It's so cool to be able to talk about Trop Rock and Buffett because not a lot of people like to just sit and harp on Buffett, and I could talk about him all day. I love everything about the guy.
Oh yeah, same. Sure.
And just amazing. And I'll tell you, to any Parrotheads that might be listening, I'm working on, I don't know if it's going to be my next show, but I'm working on having Scott Nickerson and Jerry Diaz, the two godfathers of the Parrothead community.
Oh, cool.
As my guests, and I got to get back in touch with the mayors because Peter, Brendan, and John and Uncle Jim wanted to come back late summer to do just like an old music episode. So we're working on that too. Yeah. So like I said, if anybody's interested in checking me out, just like my Boomer Blake and the Shorebreak page, and just keep an eye out. I post like crazy, and hopefully we'll get those interviews coming up soon.
Okay.
And
well, thanks.
You.
Yeah. Thanks. You too. And thanks for being on. And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Anytime you want. Thank you so much.
All right. See you later. Okay. So that was the interview with Boomer Blake. It was, as always, such an easy chat. He just so lovely to talk to. Probably could have gone a lot longer. I feel like there's a lot of potential for just if I ever run out of guests, which doesn't seem likely to happen anytime soon because I'm constantly having people like introduce me to other people. But if I did, I feel like there's so much potential to just bring back on old guests because almost every time I do an interview, I feel like we could have just kept talking for like another hour. But, you know, I don't want to make it too long. So, but that just means that there's material left over, you know, for other episodes, or if people are on other shows, you can always go, which is nice because there are like Boomer's show, he's interviewing trap rock musicians, or, you know, there's other things out there, where you might hear an interview with the same person, but hopefully they're going to be a little different. And you might learn something new in each one. So I think that's always a fun thing is seeing what sorts of questions everyone asks. And you get hopefully get a little bit of different flavor for each interview. But yeah, so you definitely want to go check out Boomer's show. If you're into trap rock, or if you're not really, but you were intrigued by what we talked about on this episode, then that's a good way to get into it. You kind of can see, like I mentioned, you can see the people, which is kind of fun. You get a little more of their vibe, you know, and it's really fun. Live shows are just cool and really relaxed, you know, and people just hanging out and you can like be in the comments and everything. So yeah, please go check him out, check out his music. I think next week, I'm going to have another awesome guest who is a marine scientist and he makes rum for Papa's Pilar, which is a fairly new rum company. So I'm pretty excited about that. It's a pretty great combination of jobs, I guess. Maybe like the ideal combination of jobs. But so yeah, I'm going to look forward to that. Hopefully that'll be next weekend. and once again, if you want to contact me, if you have questions or thoughts or whatever, you can email me at blameitonbuffettpodcast@gmail.com, or please follow me on social media. At Blame Buffett Pod is Twitter and Instagram, and also you can find it on Facebook at that, or if you just look up Blame It on Buffett Podcast. I've said this before, but Instagram is really the one where I do the most posting of like photos, and I don't know, it's just my favorite one. So if you have an Instagram account, please follow me on Instagram. Excuse me. Also, my friend Dan Smith from Classic Buffett and I are trying to put together maybe a little sort of Instagram live after show, if you will, like Buffett after show, where we just like drink and hang out on Instagram live, like a little bit more informal than our respective podcasts. So hopefully we can get that together. I think that'll be really fun. So yeah, please follow on Instagram at Blame Buffett Pod if you have that platform and you can find that fun kind of content over there. And as always, if you're liking this, please follow me or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, whatever podcast platform, and leave a review if your platform has that. I love hearing your thoughts, comments, etc. And it's really great to have those reviews. Thank you to everyone that's left one so far. And I do have a YouTube channel now where I'm going to be posting the podcast episodes as well as other videos that I make. So I've been doing Quarren cocktails videos, and hopefully when I can leave my house again, there will be more content going up there. And that's, if you just search YouTube for Blame It on Buffett Podcast, you should be able to find that. So please subscribe. I don't have very many subscribers on YouTube yet, and I'd really like to get that number up, because once you get a certain number of subscribers, you can have like an actual URL. Like right now it's just like youtube.com and then like a bunch of letters and numbers, which isn't very easy to like tell people like, oh, this is my URL. But once you get a certain amount of subscribers, then they let you create a custom URL. So it could be like youtube.blameitonbuffett or whatever. So yeah, if you're a YouTube user, please go and subscribe to my channel. I would really appreciate it. and I think that's all for today. Like I said, stay tuned next week. Hopefully we'll have another great episode. And until then, if anything's going to happen, it's going to happen out there. Blame it on Buffett. He was my hero from way in the past. And I sang his songs and had island dreams before I ever read the main up a mask. Blame it on